Thank you very much, David. Thank you, Gavin, and the organisers for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm going to spend my 10 minutes slidelessly espousing the virtues and the kind of excitement and the positivity that I feel towards the application of AI in the early detection of disease. So as David said in the intro, I work for Cancer Research UK. So that's the context for my positioning here. I'm the head of prevention and early detection research there. I should also say I'm currently on the secondment part-time, 2 days a week, working for the government in the Office of Life Sciences. And I'm obliged to tell you all that the views I'm about to put forwards are my own and are certainly not representative of His Majesty's government. So with that said, the early detection of disease for me is built around three key issues. The first being, who do you test? And that's a matter generally of understanding risk. The second is, how do you test? And that's a matter of technology. And then the third is, what is it you're testing for? And what have you actually found once you've found it? And how do you deal with that? And that for me is a matter of biological insight informing clinical decision-making. And I think that AI is set to have a major impact on all three of those domains. And in fact, as it's going to have an impact on pretty much every aspect of human life. So, you know, my context, the way I come at this is I'm fundamentally a technology optimist. Yeah. And I feel like it's inevitable that AI is going to impact, you know, most aspects of human existence in the same way as many other, you know, technological advancements have throughout human history. And, you know, I think this is probably going to be of the order of magnitude of things like the agricultural revolution and the industrial revolution. You know, it's going to change the way we live. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people working with abacuses or looms anymore. And, you know, human employment and human input is going to change. And change doesn't necessarily mean obsolescence, and it doesn't necessarily mean bad, it means different. So that's my sort of umbrella statement. Now, within that, let's look at the early detection of cancer. There's a few areas which are already being impacted by AI in the way that science is conducted and the way that clinical care is delivered. And those I'm going to cluster in, I think, three broad areas, one being risk, one being the sort of biological and biomarker side of things, so blood tests and the like, and then one being imaging. And imaging covering both the kind of gross anatomical imaging like x-rays, CT scans, MRI scans, but also imaging on the microscopic level. So, you know, when you take biopsies and look at pathology slides. So if we start with that first area, there's a ton of research that's been ongoing for years now, and there's already a lot of evidence to show that AI and machine learning approaches can be trained to replicate the function of, for example, a pathologist. So when you take a biopsy of a potential tumor at the moment, and you look at that down a slide, it's been stained, the pathologist reads it and makes a judgment, is this cancer or not? And that judgment is based on their assessment of that visual pattern that they can see before them. You know, are their cells penetrating through membranes where they should not be penetrating? Are there, you know, clusters of cells that are behaving in an unusual way for the type of cell that they should be? And what the pathologist is doing there is pattern recognition. And of course, AI is a pattern recognition engine, as is, you know, the human brain. And so you can train up the machine to essentially replicate the judgments that humans make. Now, the problem with the machine is it's only as good as the human judgments. And the problem with the human judgments is that they are inherently flawed also. So no disrespect to any pathologists or indeed radiologists in the room, but their judgment is not perfect. They can only perceive what they can perceive. And so there, you know, there are always small things missed and things misinterpreted and perhaps over extrapolated. But also there's an issue of reproducibility between individuals. A different pathologist will look at the same thing and give a different judgment. There's also demonstrable, you know, evidence in literature of variability within individuals. So a given radiologist at any given moment of the day could make a different judgment from the same scan. So the hope is that the machines actually won't just be replicating what human performance can achieve, but actually can transcend it and eliminate variability and subjectivity You know, based on the time of day, or you know how tired they feel, or how many scans they've just had to sit through. And that's something I think that applies to all of those sort of image based recognition areas, and be that, you know, looking at an MRI scan, being it looking at a pathology slide, being it looking down a camera through an endoscope at a, you know, a tube inside of your lungs or colon. And there are data already showing that we're matching human performance, and the hope is we can exceed it. And there'll be other technological advancements that can synergize with AI approaches. So, for example, with early detection of colorectal cancer, the first line is a test of the feces to see if there's blood in it. If you have that, then you're referred for a colonoscopy. And at the moment, that's a very manual process. It's a camera on a tube that's interpreted by a human looking down it, who may or may not spot anything suspicious. There are technologies like a capsule endoscopy now, the way you can swallow a miniaturized camera in a pellet that then passes down through the colon, that gives continual, you know, video surveillance of the colon as it passes through. And AI approaches then can be used to sort of do the spotting of, you know, hours of footage that a human couldn't realistically do. So you can get a more complete picture with a combination of technologies than you can from the standard approaches alone. Moving beyond imaging, the other big thing that's happening in the early detection of cancer at the moment is what are called multi-cancer early detection blood tests. I'm going to call these MCEDs for short, multi-cancer early detection. So these MCED tests, which you'll probably read about in the newspaper, they key off of fragments of tumor DNA which circulate in the blood. So tumors are unstable things. They break down and they'll release their contents into the bloodstream. And their tumor DNA is subtly different in small ways from normal healthy DNA. But the fragments are so small, the concentrations are so low, it's quite difficult to spot. But the sequencing technology is advanced to the stage where it looks like that's a feasible way of doing early detection of cancer, with the advantage of a blood test being over a scan, over an endoscope. The advantage of the blood test being that you can assess for multiple different cancer types at the same time. So you could screen in a given individual and be looking for lung cancer, brain cancer, toenail cancer at the same time, right? And that's a really exciting prospect if it works. There's a very large trial of one such technology happening in the NHS right now. And that technology has been evolving over the past 10 years or so. The technology originally came from looking at fetal genomic aberrations. So where you do a test for Down syndrome, and you know traditionally the test is ultrasound followed by amniocentesis, you know, a needle into the amniotic fluid. That's now been superseded because you can find bits of the fetus DNA floating around the bloodstream. So we know there's proof of principle there. For cancer, much more complex. Every cancer is different. Every mutation is different. The patterns of subtle DNA alterations, there's thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of permutations. So the reason that this blood test exists and the reason that it's in clinical trials right now is AI. The complexity that you were looking for across all of those tens of thousands of different alterations would have been imperceptible to a human. But the AI is what found the pattern that test is now looking for and analyzing. So that's a clear example of something where we've, you know, jumped ahead beyond what humans were capable of. So that's happening now also. Then lastly, my third subject was about risk. So we, if we knew who was at elevated risk of developing cancer or indeed any other disease, then we could be potentially much better at early detection. So the premise being, any given disease is relatively rare in the general population. So if I tested everyone in this room right now for heart failure, for cancer, for Alzheimer's, you know, one or two of you might have it and the rest wouldn't. But my test isn't perfect. So every now and again, it's going to give a false positive. And because of the weight of numbers of people you're testing, and all tests are imperfect, if you tested everybody for cancer every year, you'd have vastly more false positives than you would true positives. And that's a problem with any testing, any screening or early detection strategy. And so the hope is that early detection, that AI can help us refine that, make it slicker. And one way of doing that is by upping your incidence rate in the population you test by only testing people who are at elevated risk. But the question then is, who is at elevated risk? And that's complicated. And there are lots of individual silos of research where people are looking at different types of risk factors. So there are people who are interested in genomic risk of cancer. You know, the genes that you were born with put you at different levels of risk. There are people who are interested in socioeconomic determinants of health. You know, the town you're born in, the environment you grew up in, the pollution you're exposed to put you at a different level of risk. And there are people who are interested in behavioral risk, your diet, your exercise, whether you smoke. These are also all risk factors. What AI might enable us to do is to integrate those. So that is an incredibly complex proposition because you're looking at, you know, thousands of variables in each of those arenas, and to model them all in together, again, I would suggest is beyond the capacity of the human mind. But that's where we're hoping that AI will also make a major impact in integrating multimodal data to assess who's at risk and who you should be testing in the first place. So that's where the three main areas where I think we're going to have significant impact. The last two kind of cross-cutting themes I'll layer onto that are the kind of caveats, with one being even once you found something, that's not the end of the story, because a lot of disease can be inconsequential. So for example, you could diagnose every single prostate cancer in every guy in this room, and there might be a couple, don't want to worry you, but many prostate cancers are inconsequential. They're growing so slowly that the individual with them will die of something else long before that prostate cancer was ever going to do them any harm. And if you built a machine that detected everything, then you'd be generating a huge treatment burden on the NHS, which may or may not actually have any impact on anyone's quality of life or longevity. So that's a big caveat to be aware of. And the other big caveat is stress and anxiety and psychological ramifications. And we have to think very carefully about what people want to know about their risk of disease and whether they have incipient disease, and whether we can advise them to actually be able to lower their risk or prevent that disease. So there are important ethical considerations around that also, which AI won't help us with or solve, but it's something that we're going to need to layer onto it as we think about the future of AI in early detection. Thank you.